and you're on the front porch. This is the last episode of the front porch, at least for the time being. I'm Scott Finn, the outgoing Grand Poobah of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. We're joined by Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
And Jesse Troyan. She's an economist and development director at the Cardinal Institute. Hey, Jesse.
Hey, Scott.
And special guest star, blast from the past, Lori Lynn, joining us on the line from Virginia. Hey, Lori, how you doing?
Hi, guys.
It's so good to have you back again. Okay, we're going to basically do a retrospective. We're going to talk about like the big issue that we keep coming back to, what we can't let go about West Virginia. And I'd like to start with you since you're our guest, Lori. You've been thinking a lot about this in your exile to Richmond. What
by the waters of Babylon.
What's that river that you're on?
The James.
By the waters of the James. What have you been thinking about as you have a little bit of distance from West Virginia?
Well, it's funny. We talk so much about the West Virginia diaspora, and especially now that I am kind of one of those people, you see it so often or hear it when you tell someone where you're from. And just, I mean, four times out of five, I get, oh, my family's from Wheeling. Oh, I grew up in Huntington. It's really kind of astonishing. But no, one thing that you see, I think, even more clearly when you're outside of the state is I think it's so special in the sense that people who don't live in West Virginia, who may have never even visited West Virginia, kind of need it to be something, I think, in the way that you need California to be something in the national imagination, or Texas, or New York City. And I think you need it to be something in good ways and bad ways. Like you need it to be kind of an avatar for our rural past, or now an avatar for white poverty or for the opioid crisis. And so people kind of just latch onto the idea of West Virginia and pour all kinds of things that they have into it, even if they're not from there or never been there. And I don't think Virginia is that way at all. I don't think Maryland is that way at all. So, you know, I continue to believe it's special in that way.
It's like we're an ink blot for people to project their stuff on, you
know? Exactly. And I mean, you know, think of New York City in the opposite direction. People who have never been to the state of New York have really strong opinions about New York City, both good and bad.
The big news media-wise in West Virginia right now, besides the primary, is Anthony Bourdain, who is a worldwide chef, traveler, does this show for CNN called Parts Unknown, and came to West Virginia and went to McDowell County, which arguably is... it's not the average of West Virginia, but, you know, it's a very interesting, unique place where the coal industry once boomed and they had 100,000 people living there. And now they have about 18,000 people. It seems almost like it's haunted by its past, but also there's some interesting, really grassroots things going on down there, too. Everyone here watched it. I'm just wondering what people's reaction was to it. Jesse?
Well, I think for a lot of people that have had the bone to pick, the answer is, well, of course you went to McDowell County. Of course you talked about coal. But that's kind of to your point right here, Lori, that West Virginia kind of has to serve as this model for something. And probably in light of 8 years of the Obama administration, where it seemed like coal was being targeted at every turn, but to be able to kind of put faces to the people who are working these jobs that a whole lot of us want no part of doing. And I think it's kind of humanized that in a different way.
I was impressed by how many faces that I saw in the documentary were not white faces. I think that maybe was a little bit unexpected and good. You know, McDowell County is not white, all apparently. And that was something that I think was a little bit surprising.
They used to call it the Free State of McDowell, accent on the first syllable.
Why?
I mean, it was a place where in the early 20th century, someone traveling from Virginia was mortified to find that black police officers could arrest white people. I mean, it's a big, strong black community there. You know, really good schools, really tightly knit.
And a big immigrant community, too.
Yeah.
Although, you know, some of that ethnic difference has faded away as people intermarried. But there's a huge Greek community there, and there were Italians and all sorts of different groups. And because of that, and because of the beautiful architecture, I mean, downtown Welch, they had Italian stonemasons build those buildings there. I think that is the future of West Virginia. In southern West Virginia, the coal mining areas, Mingo, Logan, those counties are headed the way of McDowell County, where McDowell County, a lot of the coal is gone. And so what's left? Well, 18,000 people, and a lot of history and an interesting culture. And that's the seed, I think, for our revival. But we never really treat it seriously. I don't think because we believe in it enough. I think people from all over the world would come to McDowell County. Laura, you made a point to go down there. Do you find it as interesting as I do?
I do. I thought it was fascinating. But as you talk about all kinds of people going there, what I'm thinking about was the way I took to get there, which was this really windy two-lane road. And I'm thinking, how are you going to get the people there? Where are they going to stay when they're there? Where are they going to eat when they're there? It's not so easy. And I think that's one of the things that McDowell has struggled with and will always struggle with, frankly, because you're not going to flatten the mountains, right?
Well, they've tried. But yeah.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm thinking about getting there. There's three ways from where I live to get there, none of which are good. You know, it is. You have to try to get there. It takes a certain amount of effort. My wife, by the way, teaches in McDowell County. It's one of her schools. And she knew the kids on the film, you know, the football players and all that. And Anthony Bourdain, I got to say, I first became aware of him. You remember my Palestine trip? I first became aware of him when I watched his show on that. And he pretty much got it right, you know, by my experience. And so I have respect for him. I think McDowell is an outlier, but I think he did a pretty good job.
Well, one of the questions I've got, you know, we're talking about the accessibility and how difficult it is to get to McDowell County with the oft-repeated, oh, we're going to build the King Coal Highway and like the Southern Coalfields Expressway. Does that give them an avenue into something that resembles a much brighter future and kind of revives this cool history and this intrigue?
I think it's a necessary but not sufficient thing to have an easier way to get there. You know, there are four-lane highways now into all sorts of parts of Appalachia that aren't necessarily taking advantage of it yet. My thing, and on the way out the door, I'm going to give advice to Woody Thrasher, the Commerce Secretary, and all of the West Virginia development types, and just say, I really think that for most areas of West Virginia, we need to focus a lot more on things like tourism and a lot less on things like trying to get a 500-person plant to move to McDowell County, because it ain't going to happen. We need to really develop the infrastructure, as Lori's talking about, to do this sort of stuff. Because at the end of the day, the thing that drew me here was the beautiful land and the interesting and unique people, right? And it's a huge draw once people find it. Larry Gross, the host of Mountain Stage, often says that if you can get people to come to West Virginia, they want to come back. But that first step is a huge first step.
So here's my quote for the week. West Virginia's best writer for my book, From Milton, by the way, was Breece Pancake. And he talked about how hard it is to get to certain places in West Virginia. And he had three ways for getting to the fictional town. He says, you lose a wheel, fall off a biplane wing, or cross yourself left-handedly.
Well, so, you know, this is a little bit of a retrospective. So I want to take a moment and just say thank you to each of you for the special things you brought to the show. Jesse, you seem enthusiastically interested in and bullish on the future of West Virginia. You come here with a passion for the place that can't be denied, and I really appreciate how you brought that into the show.
I wouldn't have had the perspective and the draw to come back and to try and be part of the solution had I not spent the 5 years that I did in the suburbs of D.C. Because I remember so passionately the first few months I was out there. I hated being in Fairfax with every fiber of my being. When I crossed the state line, and it's this arbitrary boundary, but it was just seeing that, you know, welcome to wild and wonderful West Virginia. And I was just like, I'm where I belong.
You know, and of course, Lori, we did this when you went away. You just have an interesting mind and a way of seeing things. You know, you can play politics with the best of them, but what we found interesting was when you took a step back away from the fray and looked at the bigger issues, what's driving us as a culture.
And also your legal training, I think, was interesting. You could find, like, quirky angles to look at things, and just sort of picking up on things like free-range parenting, which I believe is one that got away. We had a great episode that disappeared
in
the paper.
That episode.
Episodes of The Front Porch.
But there are several interesting little avenues that we explored, and There are quite a few times we tried to disagree and couldn't quite get there, too.
Yeah, those were the fun ones. No, I much prefer talking about culture, and I think whoever it was that said politics is downstream from culture, I think it's less important.
Yeah, it's interesting how we spend all our energy and time on these 24-hour news channels or whatever, even on NPR, talking about, you know, an election. My good friend Anna Sale, who used to work here and now does this podcast called Death, Sex, and Money, she was on the campaign trail in 2012, and she was going around and talking to people about Romney or Obama or whatever, and people wanted to talk about these other issues. And she had to say, well, no, we don't want to talk about, you know, your health issues, or we don't want to talk about your relationships, because what's really important is whether Obama or Romney gets elected. And you know what? She realized that that wasn't true, right? Maybe this left-right divide, by the way, which is the basis of this entire show. So I'll call myself out. Maybe that's a stupid divide sometimes. And I think Jesse and Rick and Lori, you guys showed that all the time.
Well, also, it kind of goes left and right, depends on which side of the room people sat in during the early days of the French Revolution and whether they were pro or anti-monarchist. And I don't think monarchy is a big divisive issue nowadays, so it's kind of an antiquated...
I don't know, Lori, you're pro-monarch, aren't you?
Well, it depends on how you do it. You know, it can't be a despot. But I love, just as a cultural thing, I love the monarchy. I will be getting up at 6:30 a.m. on May 19th to watch the next royal wedding, as I'm sure you will also, Rick.
You betcha. Yeah, actually, constitutional monarchy, symbolic. I don't have, you know, I'm the Edmund Burke guy, you know.
But I want to defend you, Scott, on the whole left-right thing. I mean, this whole thing was your idea, and you... pushed it through, I am sure, in rooms where Rick and I were not present and handled a lot of things that we never got to see. And, you know, honestly, would you have been able to do it if it had just been you and Rick and another liberal or three conservatives? I mean, you kind of have to have it in that, you know, to make it palatable.
Matter of fact, as we speak, the NPR special strike team is on its way to the studios here in Charleston, because we have on the radio right now not one, but two conservative women at the same time.
It's unnatural.
Because it's not a very interesting debate if we're just all – there's no debate at all, unless we have diverse perspectives on the air. We need to keep this going in different ways throughout society, in our lives. We need to reach out to people who are different from us and sit down. Because what's interesting to me is when you think that you're not going to agree on things and you end up agreeing, or that you disagree in a different way than you might expect. And the fact that in our society that we're dividing into these camps that never talk to each other, we're forgetting that. It's just a less rich life when you don't have that sort of interaction. And so having Jesse and Lori and Rick, having you guys come in and have these sorts of conversations, it's always interesting. And that leaves me to you, Rick. How could I say it? You are a very unique individual. It's very rare to have someone that is both funny and as smart as you are and not full of himself. That's unheard of. I appreciate your willingness to put it out there every week. I found myself pushing back against you a lot, but that was only because I think it just made you better and sharper. I think at the end of the day, the arguments that you come up with and the way you draw on all of history and philosophy to do so is unique. And West Virginia is very lucky to have you.
Well, thank you, Scott. And as for the funny part, let me just say looks aren't everything, okay? So,
I think one of the services that the Front Porch has provided is getting the state treasure that is Rick, you know, recorded for posterity. The archives will be a rich trove. Just, you know, for history, for the people that you've met, Rick, you have so many stories, and they're not always explicitly political stories, but they're just woven into the political history of the state. And it's just, it's been so interesting for me to listen to you. I never would have met you if it weren't for the Front Porch, and I'm so grateful that I did.
Yeah, I remember first reading it, like November. Is that when you started? November 2014?
Yeah.
And I remember like, okay. I had a feeling it was going to be on one way or another with us, but I never knew how much I would enjoy it. So I really appreciate you, Lori. Thank you.
And that's thanks to Scott, again, for bringing us together.
Yeah, and I guess we ought to give Scott some props, too. You know, it's not going to be the same deal around here without you. I appreciate it. You've done some really good things, even aside from the front porch, which is possibly the greatest achievement of your life. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, but you know, people are interested in talk, you know, and I think we listen to West Virginia Public Broadcasting a lot more than we used to because of some of the changes that have happened in the last few years. So.
Well, civil talk, right? And I feel like if I have like a mission statement, it's to bring people together that are different, to listen to each other and understand each other. Try to be this connection between the larger world and West Virginia and all West Virginians. You know, we try to help people understand, just like Anthony Bourdain, I hope, helps people understand that West Virginia is more complicated than people think. We are a lot more than what people think we are. And every single day we are, as loud as we can, we are broadcasting that message to the world and then also to ourselves because we absorb these stereotypes internally too. And that's just as damaging. So, yeah, I'm proud of what we did together.
Yeah, I'm going to back that up entirely that under your leadership, the whole telling West Virginia's story and understanding that there is going to be so much nuance to it. And there's a lot of positivity that's hidden underneath of it that I think a lot of West Virginia's problems, it's not that you can't do whatever it is that you're aspiring to, but you believe that you can't. It's trying to help people find that oomph. You know, find that little gem, that drive within them, that something that gets them up in the morning and is like, here's the difference I'm going to make. And there are other people here in West Virginia doing the thing too.
Okay. Well, Rick, not to put you on the spot, but, you know, for every week now for almost 3 years, we've asked you to do some sort of words of wisdom or Bible verse. And this is the last one. So no pressure, but, you know. What's your word?
I mean, I did already offer up Breeze Pancake, our greatest writer, but Raymond Chandler said to say goodbye is to die a little. So that's kind of a downer. Or we could go with Dylan. I ain't saying you treated me unkind, Scott. You might have done better, but I don't mind.
And that's a song we can go out on.
Yeah, we could do that.
Perfect, man. All right. And that is The Front Porch. Even listening to Scott Finn, the Grand Poobah here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thank you so much to Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee, Jesse Troyan of the Cardinal Institute, and Lori Lynn. I really, really appreciate the time that you all have spent on this project together. And you know what? The conversation goes on. I want you to follow us all on Twitter where we still talk to each other regularly. I am Radio Finn. Rick, you are?
El Cabrero.
Lori, you're?
I'm still WB Pundas.
Good for you. And Jesse, you're?
JL Troyan _ WV.
And that's The Front Porch. Take care. All right, guys. Thank you so much.
So long, honey bear, where I'm bound, I can't tell. Goodbye is too good a word, babe. So I just say fairly well. I ain't saying you treated me unkind. You could have done better, but I don't mind. You just kind of wasted my precious time. Don't think twice, it's all right.